NBA draft was last night. We had Chip Williams on yesterday at this time, and welcome him back today to see how things went based on what he thought and how it turned out. Chip, how do you rate your performance as far as the way you thought the draft would go and how it turned out?
Well, I said on here yesterday that I expected a big player to be moved and probably for a top 10 pick. And that was just kind of based on all the smoke that had been going on. And I assumed there had to be at least a little bit of fire. And it turns out that was the case. The Minnesota Timberwolves landing, basically forming their own big three now. I mean, obviously two of their guys in Wiggins and Towns are younger, but Jimmy Butler, getting him for what they were only had to give up, I thought was an incredible move. I was not the biggest Lauri Markkanen fan. So, you know, he went 7, was part of that trade for Jimmy Butler to Chicago. Only had to give up Zach LaVine, who is an exciting young player, but not necessarily someone that you think is going to turn out to be a star. Same thing with Chris Dunn. He's a fine prospect, but nothing. You didn't give up Towns. You didn't give up Wiggins. You kept those two intact. You add a star in Jimmy Butler. And then, you know, beyond that, several trades throughout the draft. I thought some of the picks were a little more surprising. Some stuff went according to plan. You know, it was an exciting night. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and really the excitement started when, you know, Markelle Fultz was drafted by the Sixers, but more people were probably locked into that number 2 pick. Lonzo Ball, LeVar gets his wish, and you have Lonzo and the L.A. connection there. How about just like from a basketball angle? Because there's always a lot off the court that we talk about Lonzo, but how about how he fits with the Lakers from a basketball standpoint?
Right, I think that's kind of the question or the talking point that gets overlooked. It's like, okay, we know obviously LeVar wanted it there, Lonzo wanted to be there, but like, okay, at some point you have to play basketball. How does Lonzo fit basketball-wise? And it's tough to say from this point because I think the roster in L.A. is so far from being a finished product. You still have a lot of moving parts. But just in terms of, you know, you now have Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball as kind of your two centerpieces to build around. Ingram struggled at times last year. I was very high on him coming out of last year. I think that he's still going to be a very good player, still a very good prospect. But from Lonzo's perspective, I think that what you'd like to see them do for him is to put him in kind of a spread pick and roll situation where he can really operate, get downhill. He can have open jump shots, find open shooters. He's a tremendous passer with an extremely high basketball IQ. And Luke Walton is a guy that comes from the Steve Kerr coaching tree. Did an excellent job coaching the Warriors last year in Kerr's absence. And so I think that he is a very sharp guy and is going to be able to get the most out of Lonzo Ball because he is an incredibly talented guy. You know, say what you want about his father, say what you want about all the off-court stuff. The guy can flat-out play basketball. He was my number 2 player on the board, and I thought the Lakers made the right call.
You said yesterday, and we were speaking with Chip Williams of NBA Draft Blog, that you thought the second round was going to be very productive. We saw a lot of moves where teams went and traded things for second-round picks. When somebody does that, do you think that player is going to be somebody that will fit in the rotation for that team?
I think it's very possible. I mean, you look at what teams try to do in the second round. It's a lot of flyers. I mean, you're just kind of taking a guy that you think, you know, A, he's going to have to be a good locker room guy because it's, you know, something that I don't think is brought up a lot of times and when we're analyzing these prospects is, okay, sure, he can shoot, he can rebound, he can pass, whatever. But, like, is he going to be able to fit into the locker room culture that we have right now? And I think that's something that weighs heavily, and that's why you see some guys get drafted, some guys not get drafted. It's just the way that they're going to fit in because, listen, when you're in the second round, it's, you know, they don't have time to put up with a jerk or they don't have time to put up with a cancer in the locker room. They want a guy that's going to come in. Probably a guy that's going to feel a little bit disrespected, felt like he was probably a first-round pick, and it's just going to come in and work. And I did, like I said, I thought that this second round had some talent and there was potential to really add some value to your roster through these second-round players. And you saw that. You saw the movement. You saw teams trying to get into the second round. The team I cover here in Memphis, the Grizzlies, they were able to acquire 2 second-round picks, trading some of their future picks. You saw and some teams, to be quite frank, I was surprised that they held on to as many picks as they did. Boston hanging on to several of their seconds, Philadelphia doing the same. So It costs some money for some teams to get in there. It costs some picks for teams to get in there. I know the Warriors made one pick all night. One of my favorite moves of the entire draft. They bought a second-round pick and drafted the kid Jordan Bell from Oregon, who I think is going to flat out be a 10-year rotation pick. Just incredible. Let me just say this. If the Warriors, Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, if those guys are giving you a call, they want to buy your draft pick, probably just hang up the phone and pick whoever you think they're going to pick, because those guys do it right.
That's a good advice there, Chip Williams. NBA draft blog, talking about the NBA draft results from yesterday. And on that note of like team and player fit, like you mentioned the Warriors doing that in the second round. Is there anybody in the lottery that you think really meshed with player that they got and fit for them?
Yes, I think the Dallas Mavericks, a team that not necessarily one that was a lot, you know, talked about. They were kind of in the back half of that top 10, but they got Dennis Smith to fall to them at 9. And I think that is a hand-in-glove fit. I think Rick Carlisle is incredible, incredible basketball coach, and he is able to get the most out of his players consistently. Dennis Smith played on a pretty bad North Carolina State team, almost like a Markelle Fultz-like situation where team was not very good. Coach ended up getting fired. Not a great situation, but he was fantastic all year long. I had him as a top five, or excuse me, the fifth prospect on my big board. So the fact that they were able to stand pat at 9, get their point guard, which they need desperately to pair with that core they've got with Harrison Barnes and Nerlens Noel, I thought they did a fantastic job. And I think Dennis Smith probably should be one of the odds-on favorites to win Rookie of the Year.
Wow. And then on that note, kind of the opposite, like somebody where it just the pick didn't really seem to make much sense to you.
I got two. I've already mentioned his name. First one is Lauri Markkanen. I just don't get it. I think Markkanen is a guy that deserved to really be at the back half of the lottery, maybe somewhere around 12 to 16. He went number 7 ahead of some guys, for example, Dennis Smith, Malik Monk, Zach Collins even. I thought that all those guys were significantly better prospects. And my beef with Markkanen is obviously an amazing shooter coming. He's going to carve out a role in the NBA. My problem is he doesn't rebound, he doesn't defend, he doesn't move his feet very well. So it's great that you have the 7-footer that can shoot, but if he's not going to do the other things that a 7-footer does, which is protect the rim, rebound, take up space in the paint, then is it really the benefit of having a shooter that's 7 feet tall, if that makes sense at all? It's almost like you're having a 7-footer who plays like he's 6'7", because you're not getting the added benefits of him being that size. And then the other one was Luke Kennard. It's just kind of the same thing. I didn't get the hype of him being a lottery pick. I thought Kennard was a prospect ranked in the 20s. I had him 30 on my big board. I think he's going to make an NBA roster. I think he'll probably be, you know, a bench rotation player. I just thought he was overdrafted, a little bit overhyped. You know, occasionally guys that go to big colleges like that and are productive do that. But just because you go to a big college and have a productive college career does not mean that you're an NBA prospect.
Chip, thanks so much for your analysis yesterday and today. Spot on. We appreciate it. And we will talk to you, I'm sure, again next season as we get back to the draft.
Anytime, guys. Thank you very much.
And that's Chip Williams. He does a great job of explaining things.
Yeah, definitely, because you get into, all right, this guy played for this team in college, and he projects, well, I know he can shoot, but he kind of puts it into a more simplistic way to actually understand how it goes, especially when you start getting into the second round.